Good morning, everybody. I just want to make sure I welcome everybody to the Workforce, Labor, Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee here today. I want to make sure you're in the right room. And we've got a very full agenda today, very important bills in front of us. I see that we have a quorum. Representative Mecklen, have you had a chance to review the minutes from yesterday, April 1st? And I'm looking for a motion to move the minutes.
So moved.
Members, any questions, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are carried from yesterday. Thank you very much, members. We've got, again, a number of bills today. I just want to kind of lay the plan out today here. Testifiers, when you're coming up today, we've got about 2.5 minutes assigned for each testifier. Again, you'll be getting a card raised if we need you to wrap it up. We'll also give you a 30-second and a stop motion. So just if you can, please wrap it up if you can at that time. Again, we also have one informational hearing today, which will be towards the end from Representative Van Binsbergen. We'll talk about that when it gets there, too. So with that, members, we're going to get started with House File 3030. Chair Igo and Representative Warwas is here to open the bill up. I know there's a couple of amendments we're going to talk about, Mr. Chair. So with that, the chair moves House File 3030. For I think it's moving on to the Ways and Means at this point. So with that, with further discussion.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
I go. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we start, if we could take up my author's amendment so I can get the bill in the shape I would like before I present it.
Absolutely. Representative Schultz, have you had a chance, or would you like to move that A1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move the, it is the A1 amendment to House File 3030. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A1 has been moved in front of the committee. Any comments or any comments from members? Otherwise, we'll just get it into the shape the author would like to do that. Seeing no member comments, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? As amended, House File 3030. I think we have another amendment as well. Do we want to bring that up or not later? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Want to make sure we cover that. With that, as amended, House File 3030 to you, Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Baker and members. House File 3030 in front of you today is a really important bill for the future of the Iron Range. It contains three separate provisions, the first most importantly being a UI extension for the workers at Cleveland Cliffs that were laid off just a few short weeks ago. With the news that was hit on the Iron Range, the range delegation scrambled and went into action about how we can support the men and women of labor and our communities and our traditions and our history, but most importantly, support our future. So the first part of this bill, Article 1, is an unemployment extension that would take place the minute that their current unemployment would run out, which is slated to be about Christmas time. It would give them an additional 26 weeks. It's really important that we keep and support our workers for what they do for this important industry that is mining. The backbone of the American steel industry is Minnesota's Iron Range. We need to support these workers today and make steps in that direction to preemptively step in and make sure that we protect their jobs and their livelihoods. However, with this bill, we've included two other provisions. And when we had conversations with the steel workers and with our communities, what we needed to do, the conversation that came forward was that we needed to add something that actually looked at the sustainability and the future of jobs for the Iron Range. Inside the bill, there's two separate provisions. One is for the safe storage of reactive mine waste. And the other is going to be for a site-specific standard for sulfides. These two important provisions are critically important to the future of not just taconite mining, but copper nickel mining as well. Both of these provisions have been well vetted in science and have been worked on for a long time. A site-specific standard has been being talked about in these halls at the Capitol for over a decade. And as we've seen on Monday night, there was a court decision made that directly affects just another taconite mine on the range because we don't have rulemaking in place for a site-specific standard to be able to work with a company and find a sulfide standard that works. And that's the problem. So what we're getting at here today is let's support workers right now in their unemployment, but let's support them now in the biggest move, which is supporting them with jobs not just for today, but for future generations on the range so we can live and prosper in the region that we call home. And that, members, is basically the bill, but I want to hand off to my co-author here, Representative Warwas, to give a few comments as well.
Representative Warwas, welcome to the Workforce Committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Baker and Co-Chair Pinto and members of the committee. I am Cal Warwis. I'm a lifelong Iron Ranger, third generation miner, second generation steelworker in the Steelworkers Local 1938. And the 22nd of this month will mark 29 years in iron mining for me. I want to welcome steelworkers that are here in the room from the Iron Range. If you guys want to.
There we go. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. I'll be briefed because we have a lot to get to. I'm co-presenting this bill with Spencer. This affects both of our districts. The Iron Range is a unique place, and I just want to bring that into focus for you. Our districts, mostly 7B, 7A, and 3A, most of northeastern Minnesota. You're going to hear today that we have a 140-year history of mining. You're going to hear that our workforce is deeply committed to fairness, union labor, environmental stewardship, and taking care of those less fortunate. All those things are true and are the embodiment of who we are as a people. I'm here to say that supporting our mining workforce should remain as uncontroversial as ever and has always been a bipartisan issue in the legislature. Those that came before us understood that our workforce, with their particular skill set, and my brothers and sisters and these locals, they're bringing huge tax benefits to our state, and I'm told there are 11 million jobs in the United States downstream of the mining industry. We need to support our steelworker jobs and the surrogate positions that exist as a result of this industry. These positions are family sustaining. I can tell you that mining has provided everything I've needed in the last 48 years and continues to support my wife and kids to this very day. After last week's announcement about the Cleveland Cliffs layoffs that will affect over 600 people and their families, and the long-term effects this will have on the region that is dependent on a mineral-based economy, I've seen the Range come together in a way that I haven't fully recognized in my adulthood before. We are a steelworker family on the Range. We are proud of our heritage and want to make our contribution to our region, state, and country in the same way that our ancestors did. Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Warwas, for your testimony. With that, we've got a number of testifiers. If I could ask Tom Johnson to come forward. Next on deck would be Al King. So what we're going to try to do is kind of keep this thing moving if we can. So please be ready to step right in. So, again, just a reminder, everybody, 2.5 minutes is what we're asking for. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 3030. The MPCA is generally supportive of the intent of the bill authors, which is to support the Iron Range mining workers and their families. Mr. Chair, the agency was unable to complete a fiscal note in time for the committee hearing today, which is why I'm here today regarding Article 2, Section 2 of the bill. This is the only portion specific to the MPCA. Section 2, Subdivision 5, charges the MPCA with a major rulemaking, which will have a significant cost. Though the bill references a previous rulemaking and directs us to complete the rule, this would in truth be a new, brand new rule effort, since the MPCA's last attempt at this rule was disapproved by an administrative law judge in 2017. So the agency would have to start from scratch, which would require significant time and resources. So the MPCA recognizes this topic is critical and of interest to many different stakeholders, and that's why the agency would recommend that the topic be discussed in full at the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you for the time. Happy to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next item, person on the agenda, Al King, if you'd come forward, please. And then on deck is Chris Johnson. And again, if we could have testifiers be available for questions later, that would be great. Mr. King, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
I'm Al King, president of Local 6115 at Minorca. We recently were one of the mines that were served our WARN notice a little over a week ago. And since then, it's been a whirlwind for our community and our local. And with the drastic nature of this shutdown and just the state of steelmaking and mining in America, let alone in northern Minnesota, we are at a serious point for mining. We're looking at potentially laying off 300 people. And with the nature of the industry and just the state of the company and where America is at right now, there is considerable conversation as this potentially could be longer than we anticipate. And when Representative Igoe and other representatives across in the Senate had communicated to us and in support of this unemployment extension that we very much will need, our intent is right now to get all options on the table for our members. We are losing members by the day, and if we do not get this extension and provide hope to our members, they will not be able to stay, as a lot of them are young with children. And when you have a mining job and your life is supported by that, you can't just wait around and hope that when you hear the words temporary indefinite from the company that that's going to be just a short-term layoff. With what they've done to our facility and pulling all the pumps and winterizing in March, all earmarks are pointing to this being a long-term layoff for us and our members. And right now, with this bill that we're testifying for, this is a bill of hope for our members, because unemployment, the whole basis is to help you get to when you get called back. And we have reasonable suspicion at HIPTAC and at Minorca that we may not be called back. And so when that unemployment runs out, there may not be jobs for us to come back to. And with this bill, this will provide that leeway, and getting this in now will give hope to our members that may be able to say, I can hold on for just a couple more months or hold on through this extension. And by the time next year, when we go through all of the means that we have to do to get this bill on the table and passed from the governor's office, that there will be jobs for our members. And I appreciate all of your time. I'll be available for questions if you need to, but this is very much a bill of hope for our community. My mom is a small business owner. I have Native roots. My dad is a band member, and all of this affects all of us. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. King, for your testimony today. Chris Johnson is going to be joining us via Zoom. And then if John Argogast could come forward and just be ready at the table during the Zoom, that would be helpful. So Ms. Chris Johnson, if you are hearing us, you can please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
Okay, just to stress, I'm not Bill Fredette. My name is Chris Johnson. I'm just using his computer.
Okay.
But we are unable to join you guys today, not only because of the storm. We are trying to finalize the layoff of 200 and roughly 35 hourly from my union, as well as roughly 25 of the salary. We're trying to finalize that plan. These people will be on the street soon. The unemployment extension is very important now, but what's more important to the health of this Iron Range are the two add-ons that you have in front of you. We know that this has been a fight for a long time, and I know that there's been, you know, committees put together to try to figure this stuff out, but you guys don't realize that what's happening with the MPCA ruling and all this other stuff is you're shuttering these communities, whether you like to believe it or not. And our people love it up here. We've lived up here, most of us, for our whole lives. And while I can't stress enough, the UI is a great thing, and we need that extension because we are treating this as permanent. And we have a unique situation here because of our ore reserves at HIVTAC. We have an unsecured future, let's put it that way. We need places for our members to go so they don't have to leave this Iron Range. If we continue down the path we're going and we don't use common sense laws and regulations, this place is going to look like the 1980s. When my kid gets out of high school, he's going to have to leave. And we don't want that. You guys like coming up here, enjoying our natural resources. We love living up here and enjoying them. We want clean water. We want environmentally friendly laws, but we don't want overreach. And I think we need this site specific for sure, because all that's going to happen is mining is going to go away up here. And I hear it all the time. Well, you guys got to diversify. Well, LTV down the road has been laid off for how long? What's gone in there? Nothing.
Chris, we've got about 10 seconds if you want to wrap it up.
Just to sum it up, we need all this stuff. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. John, if you are at the table then, if you could introduce yourself, and then Kathy will be on deck via Zoom. So, Mr. Arbogast, introduce yourself, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. John Arbogast, United Steelworkers, District 11 Staff Rep. I work for the International Union, formerly a MNTAC employee with 25 years, and Representative Warwis, and I came out of the same shop as ironworkers at MNTAC. I want to thank the range delegation. We'll keep it at that so I don't forget any names. I want to thank the governor for supporting this UI bill. When these layoffs hit, the first call I got was from Deputy Commissioner Jess Richards. He goes, Arbo, you called this a year and a half ago. And I did. I said two taconite mines are going to shut down. What the companies won't tell you is with President King, they're pulling the pumps out of the pit. They're moving all the equipment up top. They're shutting it down, possibly permanently, if not for a very long time. So we really need to bridge that gap for those workers. With President Johnson that just spoke, they're down to a one-line operation. They used to have 600-plus people. They're left with 300. This is going back, for some of you in this room with gray hair, to 1981 to 1989. When the mines were closed. There was over 10,000 miners. We're down to 3,000 some. We need this help drastically. On the other issues, my job is to work with, Jess Richards, Joe Henderson, Katrina Kessler at the PCA. We need to look at the sulfide issue on site-specific, work with the new technologies, come up with a solution. Nobody wants to shut us down. No agencies. We know that. But we need some time to figure out with the KETAC ruling, and the next step is going to be more litigation. U.S. Steel, they won't admit it, but I talked to them within the last few days. If it gets to the point where they have to invest almost $1 billion in reverse osmosis, they will walk away and close KETAC. MNTAC is right behind them. This summer in permitting in June. So that's next. That's why this is so dire. This is the most important thing in my 30 years as a miner. We need to save the Iron Range, and we need your help. We need other jobs. I'm going to call it tailings. We need to open other facilities. Oh, I guess I'm getting the sign. Thank you, and I'm letting you know. This is like nothing we've seen in 50 years, so please support us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arbogast, for your testimony today. Next up is Kathy Chabers, I believe, if I got that right, Chabers. And then on deck is Mike Jugovich, if he could come forward as well. So, Kathy, if you can hear us online, please introduce yourself and continue.
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Thank you.
Okay. Wujuanin, Minogajib. Kathy Chavers, Magizim Mapwe in Ikwe Indigenous, Mapwe and Nudem. I'm Kathy Chavers. I'm a retired tribal chairwoman from the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa. I want you all to know that today I'm testifying on behalf of this bill, mainly for the unemployment insurance, but also to give my perspective. As a dual citizen of the Minnesota, of Minnesota and Boys Fort Band of Chippewa, I am here as a Native American. I'm not representing the tribes in any way, but I'm here as an individual. I want you to know that I do support Mr. King, who also his father is my nephew and a member of the Boys Fort Band. I want to say that this unemployment is necessary for these miners and these steel workers here because they are our economy up here in northern Minnesota. This layoff will have an impact on our tribe. And it will also impact a lot of businesses in these areas that are working with these mines. And I see a lot of ghost towns up in northeastern Minnesota because people are leaving. There's no jobs, there's no housing, whatever it may be. We cannot sustain the mines to be closed. That's our economy. A lot of people think that tribes are opposed to mining. Myself, I am not because it's our economy. The tribes and the mines need to work together. And that's the way it should be from the beginning. This is too important to be playing politics with these miners' lives. We have to advocate for these miners, and we also need to support our economy up in northeastern Minnesota. We can work together side by side. And with the attachments on this bill, I would like to suggest tribal input. I would like to work together side by side because that's the way it needs to be. We're all together in this as one. It's also with regards to the unemployment. The unemployment is necessary. My grandchildren, my relatives also work for the mines. My grandchildren are supported by the mines. We have to have mining in northeastern Minnesota. That's all I have to say. There's no way around it. That's who we are as people.
Kathy, about 10 seconds, please.
Thank you, sir. I just want to say I appreciate being able to testify today. And if there's any questions, please feel free to call me. Miigwetch. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for your testimony today. Next up, Mike Jugovich, if I can say that right. And then also on deck is Paul Peltier. So, Mike, please introduce yourself and continue.
Thank you. My name is Mike Jugovich. I am a St. Louis County Commissioner, former Mayor of Chisholm, and retired steelworker, proud retired steelworker from Local 2705 Hibbing Taconite. I come here before you today to give you a little bit of what I feel and how I feel about things are working with these layoffs in our area. These are just not my constituents. These are my brothers and sisters. I've been up and down with them for years. I understand this probably as well as anyone. This is who we are. This is what we do, and we do it better than anyone. We got caught up in inflation and high interest rates, and 70% of the pellets in question go to the auto industry. So I would encourage each and every one of you today, when you leave here, go buy a new car. But we on the range understand our most precious resource is our people. We cannot afford to lose our kids and our grandkids moving away because we do not have work. This is critical that we get this extension because it gives the ability to these families to stay put, to stay on the range, to help our economy. And it's not just the 600 jobs, it's the 3-to-1 service industry jobs that go along with it. So we're looking at 1,800, and the trickle-down effect will hit every business in northeastern Minnesota because everyone tightens their belt when there's a mining slowdown. It hurts. Plain and simple, we need these businesses, we need these people to be here, and we need them to have the hope to come back to get these jobs. And hopefully this industry turns around and supports us for years to come. But this, again, is something we need. The Iron Range is not looking for a handout. We're looking for that hand up, just the help to get us through this. And we will get ourselves up, we'll brush ourselves off, we'll go back to work, and we'll be the best of what we do for years to come. But getting to that point is critical, and this is where you need to come in and help us. And we appreciate each and every one of you because we know how hard it is to do your jobs day in and day out. But this is why you're here, because we know we've got the people in the positions that are going to do the right thing and help our industry and our area out. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Appreciate for you for coming down today as well. Paul Peltier, if you are here, would you please come forward, introduce yourself? And with that, I don't have any more folks signed up to testify, but if you want to, I'll put a call out if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to or against the bill. So, Mr. Peltier, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chairs. Good morning. My name is Paul Peltier, and I'm the Executive Director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, also known as RAMS. As an organization, RAMS has represented the interests of the cities, townships, and school districts in the Taconite Assistance Area for over 85 years. I'm a teacher by training, a third-generation Iron Ranger with a legacy of iron ore miners in my family. I'm going to give you a quick snapshot of what RAMS is and why this bill is important, not only to northeastern Minnesota, but to the state as a whole. In 1939, way back, right, the legislature created a commission which was to decide whether iron ore and unmined iron ore deposits should be taxed at all, and at what rate, and at what value the actual properties had. That year, two local organizations, the Range Municipalities Group and the Range Civic Association, worked together to prepare for the hearings before the state-level commission. Any reduction in tax on iron ore and iron ore deposits would have devastated the budgets of Iron Range towns, schools, and villages. Other changes would have robbed the state of revenue going to the permanent school fund. These funds, overwhelmingly generated from iron mining, are still being distributed to each Minnesota public school district. In 1979, these two groups combined to become RAMS, and we have been advocating on behalf of our communities and schools ever since. I am here on behalf of RAMS in support of the IGO bill that supports critical need in our region for our economy and for our people. We stand together with our brothers and sisters as we will work to promote a progressive, forward-looking agenda that results in a competitive position for our mines and their workers. Representative IGO's bill is a first step to steady the ground for our workers. Our communities depend on a thriving, diversified mining industry. And as a state, we need these mines to be open for business so that the benefits continue to support all of our schools and communities in Minnesota, regardless of zip code. We support miners because mining supports us. Mining isn't just a northeastern Minnesota thing. Mining is a Minnesota thing. I urge you to support House File 3030. Thank you very much, and I welcome your interest in this important issue.
Thank you again, Mr. Peltier, for testifying today. Again, folks, if there's anybody else who would like to testify, if you would either raise your hand or come forward. Seeing none, I will close public testimony at this time and bring it to member questions. Any members have any thoughts on the bill? Co-Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'll start, and they'll be probably circling back as well. But I'm just I'm troubled by and confused by the combination of issues here, Representative Igo. I think I'll say that there is strong support. I know I've spoken to my colleagues and strong support in making sure that we have the extension of UI benefits in Article 1. I'll note Article 2, there is and I understand what was spoken by the testifiers regarding long-term changes. I'll note there's a lot in here. I've been trying to dig in and understand better exactly what's in each of these the details inside of Article 2. I noticed that the motion is to send to the Ways and Means Committee. It seems like these raise significant environmental questions. Maybe I'll just ask, first of all, what your justification is for in Article 2 for having these materials, this information, not be reviewed by our Environment Committee. I'll start with that.
Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Baker, Chair Pinto. Reason being, it's deadlines on Friday. So the move to go to Ways is to keep this whole proposal alive. And I know there's conversations had with you, Chair Pinto, Chair Baker, and other chairs in this body to do a separate hearing on Articles 2 and 3 that we could find time for. And that is something that I would strongly encourage that we can do so we can get this bill to Ways and Means to keep it alive, because as you heard from our testifiers today, just how important Articles 2 and 3 are to this provision as a whole for UI.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Igo, I understand that, but I guess that doesn't get to the substance of there being, there's a lot in Article 2 that has significant environmental ramifications. This is not the committee that addresses those issues, and so I guess I have significant concerns about that. I guess, let me think here. I'll see maybe perhaps if colleagues have things that they want to ask questions about or make comments about, and then potentially we would move to be offering the amendment that you referenced before, Mr. Chair. But I'll see if anybody
Thank
else
you.
Has anything.
Other Thank member you. Questions? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate this conversation. I have a quick question about the piece of this that's not in our jurisdiction. Do the chairs of the Environmental Committee, did they waive jurisdiction? Is that the reason this is not going to the Environment Committee?
Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Baker, Representative Greenman. As of right now, no, I'm not aware of any waiver from the Environment Committee, no.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason I ask is because by tying these two things together, by not having agreement from the Environment Committee, to get anything off the House floor, we need 68 votes. And 68 votes presumably will come also from the Environment Committee, the Committee of Jurisdiction, on two of these three things in this bill. I want to talk a little bit about the UI piece, because I think that that's the jurisdiction of this committee. We've talked about, we had a UI extension last year. I think it was carried by Representative Lislegard. I think we did that in 2016. We know in this committee how important and how life-saving unemployment insurance is for workers, that it's a partial wage replacement. It doesn't do everything, but it does allow people to pay their groceries, to pay their rent. And so because of that, the UI and the way it works really matters. I'm wondering if you could tell us the impact of the unemployment trust fund of this bill and how much is expected to cost and deplete the fund.
Chair, I go.
Thank you, Chair Baker, Representative Greenman. So I don't have a full report back yet. Again, we've been moving very quickly to get language in front of us. I do have fiscal getting us that number. I know right now preliminary estimate is between $10 to $12 million.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I think that hopefully tomorrow we will have that, or maybe today. It for folks who are on this committee know that UI works like insurance. I think that last year it was about $10 million for less workers and less 3 years ago, so inflation has taken it, so it probably will be more. The reason I ask is because we need to ensure that the next time this happens, whether it's a mine closure, a plant closure, folks who are laid off from, you know, the MDH because of grants, that UI is there. And so I think we want to be able to provide these benefits. I support providing extended benefits, especially as we're talking about getting folks through the winter, making sure people can get to the next thing. The question I have, sort of, because you know that UI works like insurance, and when the fund goes down, rates go up. Do you have a sense of how this UI bill would affect the rates of the experience rating and the rates of other businesses in Minnesota?
Chair, I go.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Chair Baker, Representative Greenman. Again, I've started doing that preliminary work to figure out what the impact would be. It's kind of hard to figure out what the experience rating would be if I don't have the full-on quote of what the cost is going to be. Again, I'm kind of sketching out numbers, working with fiscal to try and get that number, but that is going to be a part of the conversation when I get that, to figure that out, because you're right, that's very, very important. However, it's been less than a week and a half since these layoffs, and we had deadlines on Friday, so I've been moving very quickly with the members that came down from the range today, as well as the delegation, to get us a bill moving forward, because it's important that we meet our deadlines and continue to work on this.
Chair, I think that's why we're also trying to get it to the Ways and Means to try to get that worked out, because it's a very good question. And final follow-up, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the urgency of these UI extension benefits. That's actually one of my biggest concerns with you tying two unrelated policy provisions to this extension benefits. We have seen in the past, in 2023, we did a clean bill. We got that done. In 2016, and that was before you and I came in together, that was before we were here, but in 2016, my understanding, it was before my time, but it took over a year. And the reason it took over a year was because there were policies that were tied to those benefits. And I think that by tying a long term, I know that there's lots of work. It's not the work I do. I'm not on the Environment Committee. And so when I was reading the bill about the safe storage reactive mines, about the sulfide standard, I'm not an expert on that. I had some conversations with our friends in the building trades. I know that there's actually a lot of work being done on that. There's a whole separate process on that. And that's the process, as we heard tribal consultation, we heard all of the stakeholders. None of that, is my understanding, is reflected in this bill, because that's a different process. By putting that process onto this bill, it compromises and jeopardizes the wage benefits that folks need. And so to get this bill, the wage extension, I think could get 134 votes. But when you add a process like we saw in 2016, I don't think that workers can wait a year for that longer-term process. I certainly wouldn't hope that, so I'm looking forward to having a conversation about a clean bill that's just about unemployment insurance that we can all support, and then let that process that I know our friends in the trades, I know that so many others are working on, play out in the Committee of Jurisdiction, where folks are actually doing the work and the agencies of jurisdiction are there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Baker, and thank you, representatives, for this bill. I think when I listen to this today, a clean bill is a bill like you presented to us to give hope for the future. Because listening to this, these conversations are long before 2013. It's 2025. Sure, decisions could have been made to move this forward to give hope for the Iron Range. But those decisions weren't made. So the clock has ran out. That's pure and simple. There's no more excuses. There's no more kicking the can down for the next group of people to be at this table. We're here. People's lives are in jeopardy. People's way of life is in jeopardy. We have people that have bought homes. You look at the schools, there is not a school in the state of Minnesota, a public school, that's not in layoffs, a charter school that's not in layoffs. You look at the permanent school fund, it comes from mining. Without mining in northern Minnesota, the schools will suffer more. The tax base is going up. It's going to be spread around fewer people. It is going to be unaffordable to live in Minnesota. Whether you live here in St. Paul, or you live in the suburbs, or you live in northern Minnesota, you will be affected by not having mining for the school, the permanent school fund. It affects every school in the state of Minnesota, and there's no school that's not hurting right now. And so where will that money come from? This bill has been well thought out in saying, look, Minnesota, we can't wait any longer. You listen to the testifiers, you listen to the miners, they've known this for a long time. Now it's up to us to say, you're absolutely right. The clock is ticking, it's ticked. And we need to get some decisions made that are going to move in an effective, balanced way, because as everyone said, mining is what needs to happen in Minnesota. Period. Not a comma, a period. We need mining in Minnesota for the state of our economy, for the state of small business, for the state of our workers. And these are high-paying jobs. These are high-paying jobs that people, it will be the 80s when Duluth said, the last one here, turn the lights off. I have friends that went through that. They left for Colorado. They did not come back. We do not want that for Minnesota. We do not want that for the range. And the range is Duluth. The range is the north. It's all connected. When one thing goes like mining, it affects everybody. And it's going to affect everybody. And so that's why I think it's well thought out. Hope it comes from having a job. Unemployment is temporary. They're not going to have permanent unemployment for a lifetime. They know it. I know it. We all know it. We need to give hope. And so I commend you for having a solution, because the solution is to make mining happen. And we have to work together and make this happen. Thank you.
I've got a couple more member questions. I want to just give us an overview. I want to try to be done with this bill around 9 o'clock, members, if I could. We do have other bills to be heard. Next up is Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't know if many people in this room know this. I'm a former steelworker. Have even been granted honorary steelworker for life from some of my brothers and sisters. So this is a big deal to me. And I spent most of Monday on the phone with you, Representative Igo, with other friends in labor, trying to understand this. And so as I see it, we're talking about sort of the urgent nature of this. And you're talking about, we want to move this out to Ways and Means because we don't have time. Why not then just bring the UI bill forward, the clean UI bill, get that through Ways and Means so it is set up and ready for our workers when they need it? Because you will find nobody on this side of the aisle that would vote against that. And I'm not even necessarily saying that you would find people that would vote against the other provisions in this. I don't know that, but it's certainly open for discussion. But that is a piece of it we can push out a little bit more so that we can continue to have conversations with our partners, our tribes, our environmental groups, folks that have the expertise in the environmental provisions in this bill. And so I suggested to you to ask Chair Heintzeman if he would, under this extreme urgency, grant you a hearing for the Article 2 and 3 in this bill. And Representative Igo, where are you on that?
Chair Igo.
I think I answered the question. Chair Baker, Representative Berg, I think I answered the question for Chair Pinto earlier. I was trying to find that time for that second hearing. We have been unable to make that happen yet with the nature of this week being first and second deadlines. I am still actively working on it.
Representative Berg.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo. I'm a little disappointed in how this is coming together. It seems it's becoming unnecessarily sort of political in nature because of not separating out the two opposite provisions in this. So I'm just going to ask one quick question in being mindful of time. So
thank you.
In Subdivision 5 in Article 2, it talks about Section B, unless and until the commissioner to the rulemaking described in paragraph A. The commissioner must not deem any waters of the state to be designated as water used for the production of wild rice. Can you explain what that means a little bit more? Thank you.
Chair Igo.
Yep, Chair Baker, Representative Berg. That line, make sure I'm looking on the right spot here, lines, you're talking about lines 6.26 through 6.29.
Yes.
On the back page there. Yeah, so unless and until the commissioner completes the rulemaking described in the paragraph, the commissioner must not deem waters as production of wild rice. Mm-hmm. That's putting some teeth to the bill to make sure we do rulemaking this time. Last time the commissioner and the agency did not do rulemaking, and that's why we just had a ruling last night that put the Keetac mine at risk. So we put a little bit of teeth in the bill today to make sure the commissioner follows through.
Any final follow-up, Representative Burke?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to first recognize the testimony that we heard today and the totality, right? There wasn't anyone who spoke today in opposition to the components of this bill. And in fact, I want to give great credit to the great neighbor that is former Chair Chavers for the work that she has done over the years to work collaboratively with the people in community, with her neighbors for all of her life, because they are neighbors, okay? And that's really critically important. She took time out of her day to support the steelworkers behind me and to say that this issue needs to be addressed in a collaborative manner, including the provisions that the other side of the aisle has said are too much for them to talk about today. This issue that we're talking about has been in law since 2015, and the agencies have not completed rulemaking. And there's a reason that this provision is in this bill. It's because this isn't about continuous, ongoing unemployment. This is about ensuring the jobs of steelworkers for generations to come. And demanding action and accountability from state agencies here in Minnesota. Because the fact that they have not followed the law is unacceptable to everyone in the community, and especially the workers, especially the communities, the school districts, the businesses. So there's a reason that this is brought up today. We can actually not all remember, because we weren't all here. But this passed with bipartisan support in 2015 in a special session, the House, the Senate, and a bill signed by then Governor Dayton. So let's get back to the basics here of supporting the workers on the Iron Range. And instead of delaying, instead of saying, oh, let's take this up another time, the time is now to demand accountability of state government for the sake of our workers, for the sake of the Iron Range, for the sake of the future of the families who make up a huge part of our economy in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Any other member questions? Representative Johnson, Pete Johnson.
Thank you, Chair and members. At this point, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Johnson moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Johnson, could you explain the amendment? Then we'll take to the members.
Thank you, Chair. This simply removes Article 2, the part that this committee has no jurisdiction over, and replaces it with clean language that addresses the pressing need of the workers at those mines by extending their unemployment benefits and not tying those benefits to highly controversial and complex environmental changes. As a union officer, I've always been very protective of process when it comes to advocating for my members. Process is one of the things that I've paid a lot of attention to in my short time down here. And it's not hard to pick up that process plays a very critical role in everything that we do, especially if we want it to be successful. The idea of tying these two topics together in hopes of leveraging some very real fears and concerns of the workers in their communities to force major environmental changes through the Labor and Workforce Committee, bypassing the Environmental Committee, is bad process. This would be akin to tying right-to-work legislation or a bill stripping our collective bargaining rights to a housing bill and not having it come through this committee. Or if you're okay with something like that, it would be the equivalent of using a different committee, such as Children and Families, to only hear ESST and paid family medical leave. We would have a problem with that. Those issues have jurisdiction here in our committee. House File 3030, as it stands, has the potential to damage both the goals that it, both of the goals that it claims to achieve, that protecting the workers and moving permit reform forward. I understand that both of these parts are important to the author, to the steel workers, to the folks who testified here today, and many others, but they need to stand on their own and find their own paths. And based on many of the conversations that I've had, it sounds like that is happening, although it may be slower than some folks like. While I cannot speak for all of my colleagues, I know that this has strong bipartisan support. And to help the workers, and I'm more than willing to work with you, Representative Igo, as we go forward on this, to make sure these workers and their families get the benefits they need, and I would ask for support on the DE one.
I'm going to take it to Chair Pinto, and then I'll take it to Chair Igo for comments on the DE. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and do ask for a roll call on this.
Okay,
on this
roll call has been called.
Thank you. Chair Pinto. And I guess I'll just, Representative Johnson, as a first-termer, expressed so well my thoughts as a chair in this committee, which is that we wouldn't want to have something where issues involving labor, organized labor, would be decided in some other committee. They would have to be heard in this committee. I so much appreciate that. And I guess I'll just say, this will not move forward with these two things tied together. And we want to make sure that our hardworking miners, in fact, have the opportunity to have their unemployment insurance extended. We want to make sure Article 1 passes, and it will not happen tied together. So thank you, Representative Johnson. We have to pass this, pass Article 1, and this is an opportunity to do so. So I would urge members to vote in favor. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Igo, your thoughts and your recommendation to the DE1.
Thank you, Chair Baker, Chair Pinto, Representative Johnson. I'm going to encourage a no vote on the amendment, and for the reason being, you heard testimony today. The testifiers that are here today, the steelworkers I've been on the phone with for the last week and a half, I've been working all hours of the night talking about this and talking about exactly some of the points you made, that tying these things together, yes, it's tough, it's bold, you know, it risks, right? But the point is, and the conversations I've had with the steelworkers that I represent in my district said, you know, unemployment is one thing and it's important to us, but more important than anything is the future of our jobs. And what happened Monday night doesn't show that these are rogue, out-of-nowhere proposals that are extreme or cutting red tape. In fact, if you look at both Articles 2 and 3, they're actually adding more regulations and red tape to the mining industry. But at least there's standards for these companies to be able to practice and follow to make sure they're doing things the right way, which I'll say again for the record. If mining wasn't happening the right way, myself, Representative Walrus, and every other steelworker in this room would be standing first on the picket line to shut any of that operation down. These are well thought out and proposals have been around a long time and are going to give security so that when this UI does run out, one of our testifiers said that when the UI does run out after the extension, they'll have a job waiting for them if some of these things are longer term. For that reason, we can't split them up right now. We need to keep these things together and keep fighting to say that unemployment's one thing, jobs in the future is another. They need to stay together.
A roll call having been requested for the DE1, the roll call will be honored. If I could have Ann do that, the chair votes no.
Pinto?
Aye.
Meckland?
No.
Greenman?
Aye.
Bakeberg?
No.
Frazier?
Aye.
Hussein?
Aye.
Pete Johnson?
Yes.
Wayne Johnson?
No.
Kozlowski?
Aye.
Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Schultz?
No.
Zalesnikar?
No. Mr. Chair, may I have an opportunity to vote, please?
I'm so sorry.
Yes.
Berg?
Aye.
Thank you very much for that. The chair seeing 6 ayes and 6 noes, the amendment is not adopted to the bill. Seeing no further questions from members. Oh, Chair Pinto.
Well, just, Mr. Chair, one comment before. I want to request a roll call on the vote, on the final vote, and then also just a comment, which is that
roll call has been requested. Go ahead. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I expect this vote to not succeed, but I want to point out to folks in the room that tomorrow there is a bill that is on the agenda, House File 3023, which has Article 1, which has the substance of this extension of UI benefits, will be on the agenda tomorrow. I expect every member of this committee to vote in favor. We want to make sure that that happens. So I just want to make sure the folks who've driven here and are seeing what's happening in this room recognize that I believe that this bill is going to go down to defeat, and tomorrow Representative Johnson's bill to extend UI, I certainly would hope, would pass. And so I thank you for being here, and thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Igo. It's so important that we pass this extension of UI benefits. Thank you.
Closing comments, Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Thank you, members of the discussion. But most importantly, I want to thank the testifiers that came down today to tell their story, from the steelworkers to our community members. It's greatly appreciated. The last week and a half has been a tough time for the range. Representative Walrus and I have spent countless hours on the phone talking to members of our district, trying to find a plan forward and a path forward. The bill in front of us today gives three things. The first is that UI support, so that these workers know when their UI kicks in that they're going to be able to make it through Christmas and into the time when hopefully our minds are going to open back up again. The second part of this bill provides rulemaking to finally go into place to fix a problem that should have been solved a decade ago, and a problem that has now reared its ugly head and came after another one of our minds on the range Monday night. The third thing is actually clears up rulings that were made outside this legislative body and were made in a way that is not scientific and has no rules and procedures to follow, so that no company has a solution to the problem that is now being faced. The bill offers a solution. Simply put, members, we have six pages in front of you, six pages of legislation, of conversation, of UI, which we all know, it sounds like it's completely bipartisan, which I'm glad to hear. That was the biggest part of the hearing today. But the other two parts of this have been around a long time. And by working with the steelworkers, by working with our communities, you know, we're not gonna keep saying, okay, unemployment is good, we'll come back later for more. It's time to secure the future of the Iron Range. It's time to know that the generations of workers and their kids and they're raising their families have a future on the range. It's been a very emotional time having these conversations. You have people telling you that they're worried about they're going to have to move in a few weeks and not come back to their homes. The bill in front of you, that's six pages, gives those people a future. This is not political. This is common sense. This is partnering with our communities and coming together and saying enough is enough. We're going to ask for the clarity needed, the science needed, to make a difference for the future of Minnesota's Iron Range. And the range delegation stands committed in standing with us and working together. And I hope that in the conversations we have ahead, we can realize that six pages of statute is nothing to be wringing our hands about. And when you read into the bills, you'll see that we're putting more regulations into effect to protect everything that both Republicans and Democrats hold dear. But the difference is, if we do this today and we move this to Ways and Means, we are going to make that difference for Minnesota's Iron Range. We are going to give the steel workers who have been laid off peace of mind, and every other miner, business owner, family, student that calls the Iron Range home in districts like ours is going to have hope that there is a future. Thank you, members.
Representative Warwalls, do you want to make a brief statement to close it up as well?
No, I would. Thank you, Chair Baker and Pinto's members of the committee. You've heard all of it here. You've heard the support in this room, my brothers and sisters in the Steelworkers Union. I just ask that you support this straightforward approach in sustaining our economy on the Iron Range. And please remember that our history of stewardship of the land where we live and work, we've been mining for 140 years on the Iron Range. This isn't a new thing, what we're doing. Recognize that mining is to us as agriculture is to the western and southern parts of Minnesota. Mining isn't just our livelihood, but also our contribution to a very broad, made-in-the-USA economy. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, again, to the testifiers, to this very important bill, to both Chair Igo, Representative Warwalls. This is an important bill, and again, what I just a little prerogative from the chair is this is much more than just UI. This is about a future for the range. And again, I do appreciate the conversations on both sides. This is important. If we had more time this session, this might be a little different pathway. But we are out of time, and we can't wait any longer for permitting that we heard earlier has to almost start over. This is something that we have to do quickly. So with that, a roll call having been requested for House File 3030 to, as amended, to be moved on to Ways and Means, the chair votes aye.
Pinto?
No.
Meckland?
Aye.
Greenberg? Greenman?
No.
Bakeberg?
Aye.
Berg?
No.
Frazier?
No.
Hussein?
No.
Pete Johnson?
No.
Wayne Johnson?
Yes.
Kozlowski?
No.
Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Schultz?
Aye.
Zalesnikar?
Zalesnikar, aye.
Get everybody? Chair seeing seven ayes and seven noes, the House File 3030 as amended will be laid on the table. With that, members, the motion does not prevail and it will be laid on the table.
Mr. Chair.
Laid over. Thank you.
I don't, and Mr. Chair, I'm not sure it's is laid on, laid over in that situation.
Okay. Yeah, I just laid it over. Yeah, so it's held on the table.
Once it goes to defeat, it still is available for that. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So that's moved. Thank you very much for your testimony today. And again, members of the audience, thank you very much for coming in. Next up, we have House File 2390. Representative Sexton, if you'd come forward. And again, we're a little behind schedule, folks, so we're going to have our testimony come down to 2 minutes instead of 2.5 minutes. Appreciate that. Thank you. And if you leave the room, if you could be quiet as you could. Members, we got to get moving. So.
Good morning, Chair Baker. May I proceed?
Yep. Hang on. Folks in the audience, I appreciate if you could be a little quiet as you head out the door. So thank you so much. Welcome to the testimony table, Representative Sexton. The chair will move House File 2390 for layover for further consideration to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Thank you, Chair Pinto. And I especially want to thank co-author Representative Hussein today and members of the Workforce Development Committee. This should be a little bit easier bill than our previous one. I wish to move House File 2390 in front of the committee. I'm going to amend my comments so I can get to my testifiers. To my right is Ms. Ginny Rittman, Executive Director, Workforce Development Incorporated. To my left is Ms. Shaylee Gates, a graduate workforce development program and now an employee. You saw me before come and talk to you about helmets to hard hats. I'm back again for another workforce development program because I'm super supportive of these and the great work that they do, especially in my area. In Owatonna, we have a light manufacturing hub that really needs a workforce. And we've got folks who grew up in the Owatonna, Steele County, Waseca area where I represent. But we're also bringing in additional workforce members. And we want to continue to grow all of our economy down in southern Minnesota. So over to Ms. Rittman.
Welcome to the testifying table. And again, Ms. Rittman, please introduce yourself and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members for having us here today, and good morning. My name is Ginny Rittman, and I'm the Executive Director for Workforce Development, Inc. We're a private nonprofit organization that serves the 10-county area in southeast Minnesota. So we have Rochester in the middle and then the surrounding 9 counties, which are primarily rural. Today we are asking for your support for a bill that provides critical services to both employers and career seekers in Steele County. We were thrilled to reopen our Steele County Workforce Development Office in 2021 with the support of this committee, and we hope to keep these services available to strengthen the economic vitality of the region. During this current biennium, in approximately just 18 months, we have served over 300 adult career seekers, 400 employers, and over 300 youth customers, helping employers find talent and providing training and support services to help career seekers access those opportunities. Our ability to leverage other workforce programming and funding is also showcased through an additional 158 dislocated workers currently being served as we continue to see an increase in layoffs in our region. Another example is the Steele Co-Works Initiatives, which is a partnership between WDI, the Owatonna Chamber, and the United Way of Steele County to have a tri-funded workforce coordinator for the area that's connecting job shadows, work experience, internships, and tours to hundreds of high school students and hundreds of businesses every year. Our focus is on providing multiple in-demand career pathways programs, and our secret sauce is really our career planning and wraparound services, ensuring that every individual has the skills and opportunities to succeed. Our largest key industry sector, as mentioned, is manufacturing, and we've also developed a successful career pathways training into manufacturing during this short time. We have a dynamic, growing economy that's in danger of stalling due to a lack of qualified available labor and workforce shortage challenges. And we have the proven strategies that can build pathways for anyone in need. This appropriation is critical for us to continue these services to the residents of Steele County. As you can see from the handout, we have unique and impactful programs that are truly moving the needle to addressing the workforce challenges of our region, all with minimal investment and excellent impact. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Gates, welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself and please proceed.
Yes, thank you. My name is Shaylee Gates, and I'm here to represent myself as a prior participant of workforce development and now current employee and proud of. I'll go ahead and share my story. As a young adult with very little direction, any family guidance, and no job at the time, I stumbled upon the doors of workforce development. I was immediately greeted with a warm welcome and a handful of opportunities. I was employed and unable to find a way when a career planner helped me. They took the time to listen to my story with all questions and assumptions set aside. I was provided with an opportunity to enroll in the services that they had to offer, and I was able to take that and obtain two different degrees in our local community college. After that, I was given a recommendation by the planner to land my first well-paying job that helped me finally provide for my family. I spent some time gaining some professional work experience after that when I found myself back at the doors of workforce development. This time it wasn't for more support, but it was for an interview. I'm proud to announce that for the second time, Workforce Development believed in me and gave me a chance to prove my skills and knowledge, and now I'm able to help other youth and young adults like myself once in my position. As a career planner, I get to come to work every day where I can make a difference in people's lives. Without that referral to Workforce Development, a career planner, and the opportunity to engage in services that they had to offer, I may have not been able to reach my full potential and be where I am today. And I find it really important because I know there's so many other individuals out there that just need that stepping stone, that just need that person to be able to get them to their potential as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Gates. Are there anybody else in the public that would wish to testify for or against House File 2390? Seeing none, member questions? Seeing none? Representative Sexton, would you close it up for us?
Absolutely. As you can see, this program is working very well. I had the honor of following Representative Petersburg into the same role. He introduced this before. We're just trying to continue the program because it's working so well, and I encourage a yes vote on this particular bill. Thank you for your support.
And thank you very much, Representative Sexton, for bringing the bill forward. The chair will lay over House File 2390 for further consideration. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Next up, members, we have House File 2468, Representative Nelson. If you would come forward with your testimony and testifiers. Appreciate everybody's timeliness to keep things moving along here. Welcome, Representative Nelson, to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record, and the House, actually the chair, will move House File 2468 for further consideration. Representative Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for having me here today. House File 2468, it just almost feels like we should cheer, but it's a rather short bill, three sentences long, but the impact of it is really can be quite large. It's aimed at focusing on a growing mental health problem that in suicide within the construction industry. As you are aware, the Minnesota legislature has taken a strong bipartisan approach in supporting the Department of Agriculture in addressing the unique stressors and barriers of service gaps that are in the agriculture industry for those farmers and rural members that are facing mental health issues. What you may not be aware of is that according to the CDC, the construction industry has one of the highest suicide rates of any occupation in the country, nearly twice the overall suicide rate for men in the United States. House File 2468 would appropriate $500,000 in both fiscal years 26 and 27 to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to bring together the stakeholders, such as the Minnesota Department of Health, contractors, unions, project owners, to support education, outreach, and the development of resources for the stigma reduction and other worksite strategies in the construction industry. Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers with me today to speak on the importance of this bill, Tim Werke and Joel Smith. Joel is the president and business manager for La Una of Minnesota and North Dakota, and Tim Werke is the CEO of the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. Mr. Smith, if you would please introduce yourself and continue.
Thank you, Chair Baker and committee members, for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Joel Smith. I'm president business manager of La Una, Minnesota, North Dakota, representing more than 14,000 construction and general laborers. I'm here to express our strong support for House File 2468, which would fund mental health and safety initiatives in the construction industry. Laborers, but not only laborers, all workers from all the different trades in the construction industry face a significant barrier asking for help with mental health and safety. When we opened our primary clinics during COVID, anxiety and depression emerged as a top diagnosis. Recognizing this urgent need, our health fund recently retained a new employees assistant program, offering 8 free visits annually per person. This program ensures immediate response to mental health crises and timely care for everyday concerns. Every call matters because every worker's mental health and safety deserves attention when needed. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2021, the construction industry had the second highest rate of death by suicide among its workers. This rate is roughly 4 times the national average and almost 6 times the rate of all construction fatalities combined. The CDC has identified several work-related factors that impact construction workers' mental health and safety. Employment instability with periods of no work followed by intense work periods, multiple employers, both short-term and long-term, no fixed work site, and frequently travel away from family. Physically and mentally demanding tasks, financial pressure to work long hours. Having spent many years in the trades, I can confirm that these pressures are real for trade workers. Industry culture has historically stigmatized mental health concerns in our male-dominant workforce. We saw a similar stigma and resistance to change in industry when we began implementing workplace hazards and safety standards. Making changes takes time, discipline, systematic approach, including lawmakers, the industry, and workers. Every day we delay addressing this crisis puts more of our workers at risk. Industry-wide safety protocols have dramatically reduced physical injuries. Mental health and safety initiatives can achieve similar success. It gives me great hope with this House file that nearly $1 million of funding could support evidence-based approaches to destigmatizing mental health issues among construction workers.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Smith. Appreciate that very much. Mr. Work, welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm pleased to be here today. My name is Tim Werke. I am the CEO of the Associated General Contractors Construction Employer Association. I want to thank Representative Nelson for this bill. And to my colleague, Joel Smith, we work closely with our partners in labor and oftentimes disagree, but we agree fundamentally on this issue. And we are in lockstep. And I want to thank Mr. Smith for his testimony. Regarding my comments, Mr. Chair, I'm going to try to amend and not be repetitive, but we are losing far more workers today via death by suicide than we are in construction-related accidents. You heard the statistics about suicide rates. I'd like to frame it another way. We spend a lot of money and a lot of time and energy in this industry focusing on physical safety of our workforce, and we've made great strides in the past 50 years, half century. But you are 5 times more likely today to die by suicide in construction than you are from a job site related accident. Think about that. 5 times more likely to die by suicide. And we don't spend the time or energy on this issue. For too long, mental health has been treated separate from general construction industry safety. Change starts with leadership. The future of Minnesota's construction industry depends on leadership that prioritizes workforce well-being. It's more about, this is about more than individual company policies or skilled trade training. It's about reshaping the entire industry through strategic decision-making and policy integration. You heard Mr. Smith mention the staggering statistics of folks that struggle in this industry with mental health crises, 83%. We have come together to create a dedicated strategy team called the Minnesota Construction Mental Health Alliance. The goal of that group is to embed mental health and well-being into every facet of the industry and change the culture. This group is a tripartite alliance of construction companies, unions, and perhaps most importantly, project owners. It's action-driven. It's about identifying and implement real practical solutions that drive cultural change in the industry. Mr. Chair, we are supportive of this bill. We think it is perhaps one of the greatest things you could do this legislative session to bring meaningful change to a scourge that has visited this industry. I want to thank Representative Nelson and thank the other 34 authors that have signed on to support this bill. Thank you, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Werke. I appreciate your time today. Seeing other testifiers on this, is there anybody in the public that would wish to speak to this bill? Seeing none, I will take it to member questions. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for bringing this bill. It wasn't until, I think, January when I was at La Una's training center where they had the conversation about this coming together and understanding the impact of mental health in the construction industry. I've done some work on veterans' mental health. They have the VA hospital in my district, the Minnesota Veterans Home, Minneapolis Veterans Home, and I'm sure that there's a lot of overlap in populations and also stresses, but I also know that getting down and really understanding folks in a particular industry and a particular developing tools and training that is actually meant with these folks in mind is really critical. And so I think this is a great investment. I don't actually have many questions. Thank you. Mr. Smith, for bringing and doing this work. What I hope as we think about this and move forward is we can continue to support initiatives like this that really follow the worker and follow what folks are going through so that we can support people, because I know that there's been an overwhelming mental health crisis everywhere. So I just want to say thank you. I absolutely support this bill. Thank you for all the work that's happening both on the industry side and the union side with workers to ensure that people have good mental health outcomes.
Representative Pete Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. I kind of want to echo what Representative Greenman said. In this committee, we've heard a few different bills addressing mental health in the workforce, whether it be first responders, military. And I think what we're also seeing, you know, across the country is this mental health issue is starting to rise up in a lot of different places. And it's also important to really note, and what you're doing with this bill is that help looks different in some of these industries. I know for, you know, my firefighters, help does not look like the standard help that they would get if they went and talked to a therapist they found in, to date myself, the Yellow Pages, right? It's heartening in a lot of different ways to see that we are making this a priority, investing in these individual workforces and these different groups, seeing both union and business rallying together and addressing this. So really happy to see bills like this come forward and happy to support them and try and get them across the finish line. So just wanted to say thank you for bringing it.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I think you tied it up really perfectly. So really appreciate your leadership on this subject. And President Smith, I know that you have elevated this to the extent that we're talking about it here this morning. So really grateful for you, because in my own community, just over the last month, we've lost two people. One was a retired union worker.
and one, I believe, worked in the trades today, and all lost to the concerns that can be addressed if we have more resources like this available. And every life is valuable, and those resources need to be available to the people when they need it most, and in the moment that most of us can't even really identify from the outside. And so that's why I'm proud to help support this, and I just want to thank you, first off, for helping elevate this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other member questions, Representative Nelson, to your closing comments for this very important bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you know, thank you for hearing this today. And, you know, it's we love to have a, you know, a cheering bill on for, you know, the 2468. You know, it's we seem like we want to have a cheer. But I think it is something that, you know, being an advocate for mental health is so important. And, you know, recognizing that different industries, different trades, different occupations require a different approach, and that's really what we've come to today to hear to, is you know, thinking of the construction trade, oftentimes you think of burly and macho, and maybe you don't think of any feelings that they have, but yet that's not true. And you know, the challenges that are there, you know, there's, you know, breaking through those stigmas and be able to, you know, really meet the needs of the individual is so important. And as we look at things, we can't just keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And I think that's one of the things that this bill does, is really it's recognizing the unique things in the construction industry and really bringing them together to really address this issue and really change the trajectory that we're on, and really bringing thoughtfulness and meaningfulness to people's lives, and maybe changing the path for someone. So with that, I thank you for hearing this bill today.
And again, thank you, Representative Nelson, for bringing this bill to our committee. The chair will move House File 2468 for further consideration to our bill. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Next up, members, is House File 3030. Again, I want to remind members, this is an informational bill. 3033. This bill was introduced this week, but it was on a pathway to the wrong committee. It went to capital investment instead of this committee. This is where I intended to see it and hear it. So this, again, is we can't move the bill, do anything, but we want to make sure it's heard about, and we're going to do what we can to see if we can help this along at some point. So Representative Van Binsbergen, if you would please explain your bill that we are having an informational hearing on today. And looking forward to hearing from your testifying. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's great to be here. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present House File 3033. This bill would authorize a grant for $3 million to the Public Facilities Authority for First District for a new wastewater pretreatment facility. Members, without improvements to their current system, there's been many mandates that have been placed on their system, on their treatment system by the state. And First District will have to greatly reduce and drastically reduce their production. This will have a huge impact on jobs and workers, not only in Litchfield, Minnesota, but across the entire region. First District processes 40% of Minnesota's milk. They get their milk from 600 dairy farms across 45 counties across Minnesota. Farmers will be impacted, plant employees will be impacted, truck drivers, retail outlets, and Minnesotans. If we don't act quickly, your support to preserve these jobs and add to them is important. Without help, First District will have to cut its production, and we'll lose those jobs, those farm jobs across Minnesota. I have Bob Hoffman. He is the CEO of First District, to here today to testify. Bob?
Mr. Hoffman, welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. My name is Bob Huffman. I'm the president and CEO of First District, based out of Litchfield, Minnesota. I'd like to thank you all for giving me the chance to speak today, and thank Representative Van Berkwist and Representative Erdahl for his work in supporting us over the last couple years trying to come up with a resolution on this. As you heard, we are the largest dairy processing facility in the state of Minnesota, central in Meeker County. All in all, throughout on our farms and at our plant and on the roads with our trucks, all the way from the farm getting it to the market represents roughly 3,000 jobs in the state of Minnesota. We are currently in an issue regarding wastewater. As you've heard, we have entered a schedule of compliance with PCA to try to keep from the plant being shut down over the last year. We have agreed to get it to this far. We are fully leveraged trying to get that done. We have a gap that we're not able to close, and we're asking for support there. If we do not reach that, we will be in a position under that compliance order to cut back at least 50% production, if not shut down the facility, which will directly affect both union and non-union jobs in central Minnesota and across the 45 counties. That's the reason why we're here and the reason why you're hearing what you're hearing. And again, I'd like to thank you for any support you could give us. This is become a very critical issue that we've been trying to resolve over the past a couple years that is now getting ready to come to a head if we do not meet the order here at the deemed timeline. And that's all I have. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman, for your testimony. Are there any other testifiers to this bill that are in the audience would like to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none, I just want to take a minute to recognize former Representative Erdahl, who's in the back of the room. So thank you for being here. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Van Binsbergen. And nice to see from Representative Erdahl as well. And I guess not so much about Section 1 of the bill. We'll obviously have to consider that along with other things. But I did want to both sort of think about a little bit and direct members' attention to Section 2 of the bill. I'm not sure these targeted population workforce grants, and those grants were created to be directed at particular populations with particular barriers to employment. And I guess I would not want to tie these two things together. I guess it seems to me want to see what Representative Van Binsbergen were to say, but I'd want to make sure that those funds that were appropriated for that purpose, there's certainly a major need, as we've heard in this committee, hearing after hearing. And so to the extent that those funds would be available because they hadn't been used up till now, I want to make sure that they would be used for barriers to employment. So if in fact we're able to fund Section 1, I guess I would not want it to be out of Section 2. I don't know if the representative has any comment on that or you, Chair, but I really would want to make sure that those targeted population workforce grants would actually go to the population that was targeted in the first place.
And to that, I kind of requested this to be heard in front of our committee. This is a bit of trying to find any little things we can, kind of the coins in the cushions, if you will. This is important. I mean, again, a lot of families are at stake here. A lot of farmers are at stake. I'm not sure, if this is the perfect fit, but it's, again, these specialized targeted populations, but for sustaining workforce is what our mission is. I hope that you and I can have this conversation with our committee as this moves along. So again, it's not in front of us yet, but I hope we can have a conversation. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and so maybe just follow up. Yeah, I mean, and the chair and I are in the process right now of looking for coins every place we can find in the couch for all kinds of things. And so just have members be aware of that. And so we'll have conversations. I guess I maybe just do want to direct members' attention to the fact that we had these funds for that particular purpose. We'll have conversations about what we do with those funds and others as well. And then also we do want to make sure to do what we can for this project and for, of course, the many other projects we're hearing. So thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. And I'd say especially for pointing out those that targeted population workforce grant issue, because I've been sort of figuring it out as I've been looking into your bill. So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Any other member questions? Seeing none, thank you. Again, closing comments on this informational hearing. Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Chair Becker. I just encourage this committee to give strong consideration. This is, as you've heard, this has a great impact on a lot of farmers and a lot of people that are connected to First District. So your support would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much for members for listening to this bill. And that'll be it for that. Members, we have our final bill up today, which is my bill, House File 2882. I'll have Chair Mecklen come up here and proceed with the meeting. One moment.
Chair Baker, would you like to move your bill and tell us about your bill? And it looks like you have three testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would like to move House File 2882 for further consideration in a final bill with that. And so I'll just proceed. House File 2882 is an attempt to clarify oversight of the installation of water lines, service water lines that run from a well to the first pressurized tank, which normally is inside of a building. Licensed well contractors are governed by the Department of Health. For decades, they have installed the horizontal water lines that run from the well after they drill it, and the Department of Health has overseen those installations. A couple of years ago, the Department of Labor and Industry informed the drillers that they also had oversight authority over the drillers' work under the plumbing code, even though well contractors are not licensed by the Department of Labor. This has led to some conflict where both agencies have claimed oversight for this installation of water service lines installed by well contractors. This bill attempts to correct this situation by clearly stating that well drillers are overseen by the Department of Health and not by the Department of Labor. Members, today with me is a constituent of mine, Sam Steffel, who is a well contractor in my district. And again, as well as Bruce Clevin, who represents the Well Drillers Association. Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to you for testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Baker. It says on my list here I have Josiah Moore first.
Oh, is Josiah going to? I'm sorry. He'll step up for a second. Thanks. I can see you there.
Mr. Moore, if you can identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mecklund and members of the committee. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the legislative director at the Department of Labor and Industry. I just have a few comments on this bill in its current form. In Section 1, the department does have concerns that this bill could exempt this work from plan review and inspections for compliance with the plumbing code, and then that would leave no avenue to ensure compliance with the plumbing code. And then in Section 2 of the bill, the department does have concerns that the language here would sort of change the scope of who can do plumbing work in the state of Minnesota, and that language with this impact would we would recommend be heard by the plumbing board. I do appreciate the author's communication and the well driller's communication on this, and we do plan to connect further on this and just clarify what the goals are and try to come up with something that helps address these concerns. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Bruce Clevin. Okay. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had hoped to set the table here with Sam, but I'll take my turn. I think it might be helpful, Mr. Chair, if we could hear from Sam to set the table, and I'll go through the bill.
Very well. Sam, if you'd introduce yourself and proceed.
There we go. Good morning, committee members. My name is Sam Steffel. Thank you guys for allowing me to be here today on behalf of the water well industry. I own a small business in Wilmer, Minnesota. We specialize in water well drilling installation. I'm just one of 200 licensed contractors in the state of Minnesota to drill water wells, and only a fraction of those 200 contractors can currently navigate the regulatory process around installing public water supply systems due to how onerous it has become. I'm here today to ask for your help improving that process to make everyone's lives easier. And I want to begin by making sure that we clearly explain the intent of the bill, and that is it's not about deregulation. It's not about eliminating licensing requirements. It's not about removing inspection or oversight. And it's definitely not about lowering the standards of the quality of the work. This bill is about keeping small businesses like mine able to continue to provide safe, potable water in an efficient manner to the state of Minnesota. To set the table, a potable water supply in a public setting provided from a well involves three components. There's a well, there's a pump that lifts the water, and there's a water line that gets buried underground. That water line is connected at the well, and it's run into the building. It's often a continuous piece of pipe, and that's it. Minnesota Department of Health has been regulating those three components for 51 years, and over 51 years, I still am not aware of any pattern or concern expressed by the Minnesota Department of Health about how that water line gets installed or any risks to public health about how that water line has been installed for 51 years. In the last 2 to 3 years, the Department of Labor and Industry has expressed the desire to duly regulate that water line. And in that time, what that has done for potable water supply customers is increase the cost and the time it takes to get these projects done. Customers are now paying for two permits for one piece of pipe to be inspected by two agencies. Our taxpayers are paying two agencies for their times and resources to inspect that same piece of continuous pipe. In my professional opinion, as a groundwater expert, I'm all about trying to install measures that protect groundwater and make sure we have safe potable water in the state of Minnesota. But dual agency authority over a single piece of pipe is not providing any benefit to the state of Minnesota. That's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And now Bruce Clevin, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce Clavin, for the record, I represent the Minnesota Water Well Association here. I'll walk you through the bill briefly, the technical parts. But before I do, I have here a three-page memo. And this memo was put together by the Department of Labor and the Department of Health jointly, and I think it was issued in July 2023. We had asked them for a memorandum of understanding. Could you clarify internally who does what? And the opening paragraph of this is two lines. It says licensed well contractors are in the business of installing water service lines when they construct new and replacement wells. Both the Minnesota Department of Health and Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry have authority over water service lines. So we needed a legislative fix here. And so that's what this bill tries to do. We have two cooks in the kitchen. We're trying to get to one without risking any safety or inspection or oversight. So I sat down with Michelle, and I want to thank her for helping me with the language here earlier this session. It might be helpful if we could start with Section 2 because that's existing. Section 2, lines 2.1, that reference to 326B46 is the licensing section. And you can see there in the first couple lines, the well drillers licensed under 103I.525, they're licensed by the Department of Health. This is all existing language here. It's been stricken from lines 2.6 to 2.11 and restated. It's almost verbatim. I would point out a difference in line 2.15 and 2.16. There is some new verbiage there that reflects more what the industry sees in the field in terms of the final pressure tank and the shutoff valve. We're not trying to get into the plumber's sandbox at all, and I want to make that clear on the record for those who may think we are. If that is problematic language, we can take a look at it, but that's not the intent there. It's to reflect what's in the field. The only other change is line 2.10 is 2 feet, and that has been changed to 3 feet down in line 2.0 or 2.20, again, to try to reflect the industry practice a little bit better. So that's existing on the licensing side. The drillers are not licensed by Department of Labor. If we flip over to Section 1, that's the new concept. Line 1.8, you'll see 326B.43, that's the plumbing inspection area. And what we're proposing on 1.10 to 12 is that a well contractor is exempt from plan review by the Department of Labor because they're subject to the Department of Health. And then the remainder of that is verbatim from the other side. And so that's what the bill does. It tries to clarify that Department of Health inspects these water lines for the licensed well contractors' worth and not the Department of Labor.
We're meeting with them, I think, today. I don't know if the noon meeting got messed up with the floor session today or not, but we're meeting with the department. And Representative Pinto, as co-chair, I would direct you, that's what, all we're trying to do here is go from two cooks in the kitchen to one, for clarity.
Any questions?
And Mr. Chair, that does, it's a testifier's, but I want to make one comment before we go to the member questions, and that would be, as Mr. Clevin said, we are planning to meet with the department, so we are still kind of making sure that we can find the right kind of agreement on this thing, peace in the valley that we've heard before on this bill before we can kind of bring it. But again, we're having very open and good conversations with the Department of Labor and others to make sure we get this right. I just want to make sure that members know I'm still making sure this is going to work as it goes forward.
Thank you for that. I do have a quick question, if I may, before I go to Representative Greenman, to Sam Steffel. There was a comment made about plumbing plan review. Have you, by the Department of Labor, has that ever happened in while you're putting a well on? I mean, you drill your well and you get it to the point in the mechanical room. Has there ever been a plan proposed by the Department of Labor?
I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but in order to construct a potable water supply for public use, there needs to be a plan review done by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Okay. Thank you for that. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am not an expert on this, but I do know that our licensed trades folks, that the pipe trades folks are. I'm wondering if as you're, and I know you sort of said you weren't intending, but I'm wondering as you worked on the language, have you been working with the pipe trades and those folks and talked to them about their licensure and how that would be impacted?
Chair Baker?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I can say that we are in conversation with the pipe bidders. I just had an email again last night looking for more discussion. Maybe Mr. Clevin has more things to say about that. Yes.
Mr. Clevin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenman, when we put this together and got it introduced, we hadn't thought to talk to them because we didn't see that it affected them. This was about jurisdiction with health. And like I said in my remarks, on the one page with lines 2.15 to 2.16, that's possibly maybe what sparked them a little bit. I don't know that. But when we have talked in the past, and I'm working with the well drillers probably 12 or 15 years, we know that the line is there where we don't get into the plumbing. That's their sandbox with Dolly, so we hadn't intended to do that. So if that happened inadvertently, we'll certainly have a discussion with them.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's exactly my concern with this bill. That's why DLI and health are a part of this conversation. We have two agencies, but they both do different things. And so DLI, the pipe trades, I see their letter. I think that the challenge we have is the inadvertent diminishing of licensure is not something the Department of Health looks at. It's probably not something you're spending a lot of time thinking about. That's not your role. But it is the expertise of both pipe trades and DLI. They're the kind of folks who get that. And so haven't thought to talk through with them, to me, is actually a concern about reducing DLI's involvement in this. And so I'm glad you're talking to the pipe trades. I see this letter here where they have concerns about licensure. I hope that you're also talking to the Board of Plumbing. But I think more generally, to introduce a bill without having thought through all those things, it is the reason that I would like to keep DLI at the table. I'd like to make sure that the folks who actually license these folks have a voice in this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'll follow up on that, actually. Representative Greenman asked about the trades. I'll ask about the Board of Plumbing. Maybe I'll ask first about that. Have you been in touch with the Board of Plumbing as part of this? My understanding from the letter that we're seeing is that changes like this in the past involved stakeholder input consideration, et cetera. So Board of Plumbing, have you been in touch with them? Not sure the testifier, Chair Baker, or who would be the right person.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question.
I'm saying the Board of Plumbing, have you been in touch with the board at all to get input regarding your bill, Chair Baker, or has your testifier been?
Chair Baker, or to either.
Yeah. Mr. Clevin.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto. So the concept that we had in the bill was to clarify that the Department of Health regulates the well drillers, and that wouldn't involve the department or the plumbing board. So if we were changing plumbing standards, then I probably would have thought to go to the plumbing board, but we weren't intending to do that. This was a jurisdictional question, as to who regulates the well drillers and oversees their work. And for 51 years, it's been the Department of Health up until a couple of years ago. And so we didn't see this as affecting the plumbing board's work at all.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, and I'm not an expert in this either, but the letter in opposition from the pipe trades, operating engineers, and the Mechanical Contractors Association talks about the bill eliminating the need to hold a plumber's license for certain work that currently requires a license. So it feels like that, how is that not within the jurisdiction of the Board of Plumbing or not relevant to them?
Mr. Clevin?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pinto, to try to answer that, I would direct you back. This would be Section 2, Lines 2.2. No license, registration, or bond is required of a well contractor, a limited well boring contractor, who is licensed and bonded under 103I 5.25 or 5.31. Now, we strike parts of that there, but it's reinserted down on line 2.12. So the well drillers have always been exempt from plumbing licenses. I shouldn't say always. I guess I don't know when this was passed. But that's not a new concept here, that the licensed well contractors are exempt from a DLI or a plumbing license. They are now, as long as they're licensed under 103I, which they are.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess, are you saying then, so the letter from the pipe trades, operating engineers, and mechanical contractors, all speaking in one voice in opposition to this bill, they say that the bill would, quote, eliminate the need to hold a plumbing license for certain work that currently requires the license. Are you saying those three groups are wrong in that paragraph?
Mr. Clevin.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. What I'm saying is not that they're wrong, but that's why I directed Representative Greenan. If you look at 215 and 216, there is some new verbiage there, but if you go back up to 2.6, the current is a water service pipe from a well to a pressure tank. And there is a little bit of a additional verbiage, water pipes from a well or between a well, water supply storage tank system. So a pipe could be or the pressure tank could be different than the system. The final pressure tank, the master shutoff valve, that's the point at which the plumbers take over, is at the master shutoff valve. And so that's where the sandbox is. That's their stuff. So I don't know in their opposition letter where the new part would be, other than possibly, instead of a pressure tank, referring to it as a final pressure tank, or instead of a pressure tank, calling it a shutoff valve. It's to get it to the building, and then the plumbers take over.
Okay. Thank you.
So to that, Mr. Chair, if I could just, and again, that letter came to me kind of late, too. The bill arrived on my desk late. There's a lot of sort of, let's make sure that we keep talking about this, as mentioned earlier from the Department of Labor and others. I'm not going to force something through that somebody's uncomfortable with. I'm going to continue to work on this bill with my partners here.
Okay.
So just rest assured, we're having more discussions about this today.
Thank you, Chair. I may be called on, but thank you. I was going to ask whether it's being laid over. I'd be reminded about that. I gather it is. So, yeah, ongoing conversations. Thank you, Chair Baker. Thanks to the testifiers.
Chair Baker, if you'd.
Yeah, just again, thank you for the questions. We're going to continue to work on this to make sure that the folks that have an interest in this oversight, we just want to make sure that our well contractors that have been doing this for decades aren't getting kind of slowed up, but we want to make sure that everything that we're doing is by the book and it's safe, and that's what we're going to continue to work on. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate, again, having the bill held over for later consideration.
And with that, House File 2882 is laid over. And Chair Pinto, do you have any closing comments for tomorrow's meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I referenced one of the bills coming up tomorrow, Representative Johnson's bill, and we have several others. It's our last meeting before budget week next week. I'm trying to think of anything particular to highlight, but we'll look forward. Actually, one thing, bill regarding unemployment insurance for striking workers, from Representative Berg. I also look forward to seeing folks tomorrow. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that. And with that, we are adjourned.